Okay. Welcome back, everyone. You had homework due this morning. Any comments, any questions on that?
Yeah, I was somewhat confused by the data sheet in the problem one because it seems not that self-consistent. For example, the CSS listed in the table, I cannot get that number from calculating from the figures. And also the Miller plateau, it didn't follow the definition, I guess.
Miller plateau didn't follow the definition? How do you mean?
I guess it's somewhat like a threshold voltage plus the current divided by the GFS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but his status has 5 volts in the figure and also in the table. So somewhat cannot get a number.
Look closer at that, see what the inconsistency is there. Okay. Any other comments? Okay. If not, next homework assignment is posted. Will be due this time next week. The first problem is going to be real similar to the last problem of this homework, except instead of being constrained to specific devices, you're asked to actually do the design yourself, go out and find the FETs that you want to use in a given application. And then the second problem is going to have to do with state plane analysis. A buck boost converter, similar to what we're doing in lecture now. So the first one will still be kind of pre-state plane content from the course. And then the second one, the state plane analysis portion of the homework. Okay. So let's dive into it. Not seeing any further questions. Last time we were talking about this DCM buck converter, which we're going to wrap up pretty briefly this lecture, move on to a synchronous buck. So this DCM buck, we had already talked about this special case when M is equal to a half, what the operation of it is, gone through and done the state plane of it. Seems on my screen, at least the state plane is not showing up itself, but also talked about what happens when it's damped, a situation that we're largely going to ignore, in this course or approximate away. In the other cases, when M was not equal to a half, we found one of two things happened. If M was less than a half, we have no way to get ZVS in this converter. The resonance that forms and that we're looking at on the state plane has an amplitude smaller than what is necessary to get the voltage to on the switch node to resonate all the way up to VG and allow us to turn on the MOSFET with zero voltage switching. If M is greater than a half, the voltage will ring up more quickly. The amplitude is high enough to get ZVS, but we don't catch it and turn on the MOSFET right as it does. We're going to turn on the body diode and have the possibility to ring back and forth. So looked at the M is less than a half state plane and then ended class on the M is greater than one half state plane. And weren't quite finished up with this. We'll finish this up now. We're looking at for this M is greater than a half case, meaning our conversion ratio is greater than one half in the buck converter, and then on the state plane that our DC solution, the center of our state plane, is somewhere more than halfway on the right of this axis towards this M is equal to one point. M is equal to one, same thing as saying V switch is equal to VG, is the maximum value we can get on the switch node. If we try to go any higher than that, the high sides body diode will turn on. So we saw kind of in the time domain and the state plane, in this M is greater than a half case, if we don't turn on the MOSFET. Diode current comes down to zero, then the diode shuts off. We have this first resonance, this large radius going all the way between the origin of our state plane and this M point on the M sub C axis. And because M is greater than a half, as we resonate through, that'll bring us all the way up to where we turn the body diode on before we get to the peak of this circle. It's, you know, the maximum M value of the circle is somewhere off to the right of what I'm showing here off this slide. At that point, the body diode turns on, and instead of a resonant circuit, now we just have a one element circuit. We've got a fixed voltage applied across the inductor, and its current just ramps up linearly until it hits this point where the current is zero, at which point that body diode will shut off, because now it's trying to develop reverse current through it. That leaves us right here at M sub C is equal to 1 and J sub L is equal to 0. And then if we still haven't turned on the MOSFET or done anything in the circuit, what will happen is this will now be the new initial condition for this same resonant circuit. As the diode shuts off, the switch node capacitance is the only thing seen at the switch node. And now we've got really the same resonant circuit that we started in, but a new initial condition. Now we're at this point instead of here, which has a much smaller radius. You can even call that something else, R2. Okay. And what'll happen if we continue to let this circuit run is we will resonate in a new state plane trajectory, still around our same DC operating point. Since the circuit hasn't changed, the DC solution hasn't changed. But with a new initial condition, we have this smaller radius and a smaller resonance here. Right. In the time domain, what that'll be is we'll begin ringing, kind of start here at peak voltage, and then have a sinusoidal ring out here. With, in terms of current, it's biased around zero. Something that looks like this. So what really happens, we begin this interval on R, this first trajectory. R, recall, corresponds to the amount of energy in this LCE resonance. We start ringing on this broad trajectory. At some point, cause the body diode to turn on. As we conduct through the body diode, some amount of energy is dumped out of the circuit, whatever the integral is of this current times VG leaves the circuit going through this path. That reduces the radius. We have less energy remaining in the system, less AC energy, less energy available to ring back and forth. It continues until we're on a trajectory where we can just ring out without any body diodes conducting. Eventually we end here, should be flat with a peak at the VG. Okay. So that's what would happen if this interval just went on. Obviously, as you've seen in previous problems, ideal case would be we would maybe figure out how to turn M1 on here, or let's just call it the FET on. If we turn the FET on at that point, say, as we've drawn it, the FET doesn't actually turn on, but if we were to turn it on there, we would get zero voltage switching of it, not have all of this diode conduction, and not have this extra ringing period. Whether or not we can do that depends on, okay, the solution to the converter. Can we deliver the correct amount of power and regulate the voltage if we turn the FET on here, which changes the duty cycles and will change the operation of the converter? Okay, so ideally, you'd like to turn on the FET there, but we may not be able to. The target conversion ratio may dictate we need a longer D3 period. So the way that we can kind of get that nice operation and guarantee it and still be able to regulate the converter is to go to something like a synchronous buck converter. So just kind of a summary, this DCM buck We had to deal with this ringing interval. We couldn't guarantee ZVS of the FET if M was less than a half. And part of the operation was having this significant interval three where things may just ring out. We may have additional body diode conduction, a couple problems with it. We're going to be able to solve all of those with a synchronous buck converter if we control it in a specific way to operate in this mode where we can zero voltage switch everything. And we're going to look at is the same kind of operating mode that we showed for the boost in the introductory example. It's got, depending on exactly how it's controlled and what aspect of your you're talking about, it's got a few different names. Generally call this thing a ZVS quasi square wave buck. There's a name for the topology, the type of modulation we're going to talk about, where it's kind of on the boundary of DCM, but slightly different than a DCM buck converter where we have these issues. We sometimes call it CRM for critical conduction mode. You may also see it called BCM for boundary conduction mode. And particularly in cases where it's part of an inverter, you might see it called TCM for triangular conduction mode in the literature. Got a lot of different names. There are some differences between these and exactly how the trajectories are defined, but all of them, the goal is to allow a large ripple on the inductor such that all devices can be zero voltage switched when running in a continuous conduction type mode. Meaning we call them something else, but it still, it doesn't have this discontinuous conduction where a diode shuts off and results in a new interval. All right. So the waveforms of it, keep consistent with what we had before, V switch, IL, and ID versus time. In one period, we're going to have four intervals. One and three are kind of our traditional switching sub intervals in a buck converter, and then two and four are dead times. So I'll label those with times. This is T1. This here is T2, T3, and T4. And let's call this device Q1, this device Q2. Our conducting device will be conducting devices. Q1 here, nothing here. Q2 here, nothing here. So when Q1's on, switch node voltage will be up at VG. Q2 is on, it'll go down to ground and back. Our inductor current will be ramping up when Q1 is on, ramping down when Q2 is off, linearly constant slope. And we're going to look at closely is what happens during these dead times. And as we saw in the introductory lecture, goal here is to allow larger ripple on the inductor currents such that we can achieve ZVS. So the waveforms are going to look kind of like this. Then during this first dead time, we'll have some sort of resonant behavior that we want to transition this voltage all the way from VG down to zero. Then during the second subinterval, we want to have another resonance that'll bring the voltage up from zero to VG. In order to get that, we need the inductor current polarity to reverse. We want to charge the switch node voltage. We need current flowing back into this capacitor in this capacitor in this direction to bring the switch node voltage up, which means we'll have to allow enough ripple such that the inductor current can go negative. And the advantage of this synchronous implementation, unlike the asynchronous or the buck with a diode, my low side switch doesn't have to turn off when the current hits zero. If I actively have this MOSFET on Q2, I can let the current go negative and keep it on. So part of the advantage is going to come from being able to control how negative this current goes. I'll draw it somewhere down here. And then when we turn Q1 back on, we'll be ramping up again. So our waveform looks something like this. Diode current itself, as we've drawn it, because I've drawn the capacitances separately, diode current would just be this portion. Okay, but I will note, if I went and actually measured, if I had a discrete diode and measured the current of it, or if I could look at the internal body diode plus the impact of that diode capacitance, what I would see is something going on here, some fraction of the total current going into the switch node, the total inductor current, is flowing through the capacitance of that diode called ICD during this time. Somewhat of a moot distinction, because physically, unless we have an external anti-parallel diode, all three of these things are really all in one package and we only measure their full current together. But just want to point out, if you run a simulation with the diode, you would see kind of some portion of the inductor current according to how much current flows through this capacitance, as opposed to all of the capacitances at the node. So this inductor current be the same as the total current going into all switch node capacitors. Here you just see part of that because you're just looking at part of the capacitance. So we're going to go through and analyze this converter. We'll first look at this subinterval 4, which is going to be very similar to what we just looked at on the DCM buck. Difference being that we'll have a different initial condition. Instead of being always an initial condition of 0 volts and 0 current, now we have some initial current in the circuit. And so I'm going to go through and label all of the currents at the boundaries between different switching intervals. So I'll just call them in ascending numerical order, I1, I2, call this minus I3, this value here minus I4. Names to what will be our initial and final condition in some resonant circuit here, our initial and final condition in some resonant circuit during subinterval 4. And that resonant circuit is going to be the same whether we are in interval 2 or interval 4. Our equivalent circuit is going to be what results when no MOSFETs and no diodes are on, which is going to be the same circuit we've been looking at. We have some total switch node capacitance, then our inductance, and we'll make a small ripple approximation on the output. So the DC solution of this is going to be the same as we've had. It's going to be V sub switch is equal to V and IL is equal to 0, which will normalize to M sub C is equal to V over V base, with V base is equal to VG still. That'll again be M sub C is equal to M, so no change there. And our 0 inductor current in the DC solution again lead to a center on the M sub C axis with J sub L is equal to 0. Our initial conditions vary by interval. So in interval 4, it's going to look like 0 volts and minus I3 current. In interval 2, it's going to look like VG volts and I1 current for our initial conditions in the capacitor and inductor, respectively. So let's go through and look at it and see how this inclusion of really some different initial condition alters the behavior during this resonance. So for our state plane, I'm going to first talk about during interval 4, like I said, which is again the one that corresponds to what we were looking at in the DCM buck converter. It's the same transition where we are bringing the switch node voltage up. Pick V base is equal to VG. I base is then VG over R naught. Our DC solution is still M comma 0, which I'll put right here. And our initial condition is now I sub L is equal to minus I3, and V switch is equal to 0. And as I normalize that, J sub L is minus I3 over I base. I'll just call that minus J3. And M sub C is equal to 0. Okay, so I'm going to call that point this right here. It's minus J3 on the J sub L axis, 0 on the M sub C axis. So our trajectory then will be this circle. I'm going to start with a radius here. Let's call this R4. 4 just being because we're in what I'm calling subinterval 4, and we're going to look at all the subintervals, keep my R straight. And as I've drawn this, what's going to happen? We could look at the initial conditions on the derivatives to figure out which direction we're going. Since I've already sketched out the waveform, I know that I'm going in the direction that causes the current to go more negative and the voltage to go up. So I'll just go ahead and say the direction is this direction. And we're going to resonate around until such a point where we hit, again, M sub C is equal to 1, which is the same thing as saying V sub switch is equal to VG. That's our boundary. We still have a high side MOSFET. It still has a body diode. So at this point, we cannot continue resonating. Something's going to turn on. Okay. So this is, happens right here. We resonate up to VG, as you've seen with some of your loss analysis. Ideal case, well, let's turn on the FET there. We can turn it on with zero voltage switching and with no additional body diode conduction loss. For efficiency reasons, we'd like to do that. Even if we don't, the body diode of Q1 is going to turn on. So either way, the state plane will look the same, but for these loss mechanisms, better to actually turn on the FET here. At this point, Q1 or Q1 body diode turns on if we didn't time our gate signals right so that we turn on Q1 right at this time. And that'll be the end of interval 4. So interval 4 is just this segment on the state plane. Once we turn on Q1, we're back into subinterval 1 over here. Same thing as this subinterval. Okay. So I've drawn one specific case here, which looks like it's about M is equal to 1/2. So we may not see much advantage yet. Kind of looks pretty similar to before. What we saw before though, was that with the DCM buck converter, if we had some smaller conversion ratio, let's call this M prime, the DCM buck converter where our initial condition was zero, we'd see some resonance here that didn't allow us to get zero volt switching. The peak on this M sub C axis was well below one. By adding this negative current, if I select it right, even with something like a low conversion ratio, if I put my initial condition down here, this minus J3 prime, at least primes just indicate I'm saying some other operating point, some other set of waveforms of the same topology. I'm probably looking at it, need to go a little further down. Let's put J3 prime down here. I've drawn this. This R4 prime, now by putting this greater negative current as my initial condition, I get this longer radius. And because I can set that negative current wherever I want, I can make it long enough such that this radius is exactly enough to get me all the way up to M sub C is equal to 1 and get Q1 on at ZVS. So adding this additional negative current can put more energy into this resonance and allow me to resonate all the way up and achieve zero voltage switching, even if my conversion ratio is less than a half. And that's the big advantage here. What's the price I pay for it? Well, every time I add more negative current, we think about the average value of my inductor current. This average IL will be what determines the output power. My average IL times my average output voltage is the average power coming out of this thing. And kind of all of this negative current, when I average through this waveform, is going to cancel out a bunch of this peak current. The more negative I make it, the more so I'm canceling out peak current and reducing my average, but I'm increasing my peaks. So the more negative current I put into the system, the higher my conduction losses are going to be relative to the average power. I put more negative current, my peak has to get higher to keep the same average, or if I keep the same peak, my average is dropping, but I'm keeping the same peak, the same RMS current, which is going to be my conduction losses. So there is a penalty to pay. This allows you to get zero voltage switching, but you're using a higher current to do it, and that higher current is going to indicate there's more conduction losses. That makes sense? Hope so. Okay. So we can analyze that and figure out, okay, what do we actually need out of this J3 parameter in order to achieve zero voltage switching? And generally in any of these constrained intervals on the state plane, we'll want to know what is the ZVS condition and what needs to be true about the waveforms in order to achieve zero voltage switching out of this switching transition. So here, looking at the state plane, what we really need at worst, our peak point on the M sub C axis is going to be here. And we need to make sure that whatever the trajectory of our resonance is on the state plane, that peak takes us above M sub C is equal to 1, which is required to turn on the high side device with zero voltage switching. So our condition is just going to be M here plus R4 is greater than 1. As long as that's true, this trajectory will take us up to the point where we can turn on the high side device with zero voltage across it. So for ZVS turn on of Q1, we need M plus R4 greater than or equal to 1. Okay, I'll plug in what is R4. R4 get from a couple different places. Probably the easiest is to look at the triangle right here. Say R4 is just Pythagorean theorem with M and J3 as the distance. So R4 is square root M squared plus J3 squared. So in order for this all to work out, I need m plus root m squared plus j3 squared to be greater than or equal to 1. So one's a constant, m is my conversion ratio of the converter that should be kind of defined for a given application. And then this is a constraint on J3. How much negative current do I need? Which I would get by either dropping the switching frequency or dropping the inductance to put more ripple into the circuit, right? That'll tell me how much ripple I need to allow in the inductor in order to make sure I have zero voltage switching at that operating point. We'll see how that combines with the rest of the converter operation in a moment. But one thing I want to look at here, this is in my normalized parameters, what is the requirement to obtain zero voltage switching? Let's go ahead and denormalize that and look at what this equation tells us in terms of actual voltages and circuit up components. So if we denormalize, just plug in, what is M? M was V over V base, which is VG, plus the square root of, same thing, plus J3 is I3 over I base. I base is VG over R0. Is greater than or equal to 1. Just plugging in the definition of these two parameters. And then what I'm going to do here is multiply both sides by VG. That'll cancel the denominator on this first term. As VG goes onto the radical, I'll get VG squared. So it'll cancel the VG squared in both of these terms. Give me a VG over on the right. Then I will subtract the remaining V over here. What I get is radical V squared plus I3 R0 squared. And then I'll square that radical, square both sides to get this. R0, recall, is square root of L over our C switch, our equivalent switch node capacitance. So I can rewrite this here as I3 squared times R0 squared, which is L over C switch. And then what I'm going to do is multiply both sides by C switch. I'll get C switch V squared plus I3 squared times L greater than or equal to C switch VG minus V squared. Then I'm going to move this term on the left over to the right. And for fun, I'm going to multiply everything by 1/2. VG minus V squared minus 1/2 C switch V squared. Okay, so what does this look like? You multiplying by 1/2 hopefully helped, but this is a constraint on energy in these components, right? We've got terms that look like 1/2 Li squared, the energy in an inductor, 1/2 CV squared, the energy in a capacitor. What this is telling me is I need to have enough energy in the inductor to make this zero voltage switching happen. Jared, you have J cubed at R4. Oh, it's just sloppy handwriting. Thank you in the comments. It's variable V referencing the output voltage of the buck converter. Yes, V is the output voltage here. Just capital V is the output voltage. the switch is here is a time-varying voltage at the switch node. Okay, so the initial energy in the inductor needs to be greater than this expression on the capacitor energy. It's maybe a little bit complicated, but what it's really showing is what is the additional energy needed to get, since our center is at the output voltage, we will passively always get to the center and a radius above it. What's the additional energy needed to make sure we get all the way to VG? So in a normalized sense, this equation is really just telling us you need to have enough energy in the inductor at the start of this resonance such that the amplitude of the resonance will get you all the way to zero voltage switching. It's really a constraint on energy in this resonance circuit. Okay. Well, that I'm going to, we can come back and do that. What I want to talk about is just briefly, kind of supporting what we did before, what would happen if we just let this transition ring out? So we're going to have same initial condition here, minus J3 and M, and same kind of initial trajectory. We go up to this point here. M sub C is equal to 1. J sub L. And what I want to look at is what would happen if we did not do a good job with our modulation and we just let this continue running without turning on the high side device Q1. Okay. So again, like we saw in the DCM buck case, we will turn on the body diode here. We'll conduct through it, get this linear interval that ramps the current down to zero, at which point we'll start a second resonance. Same center, new initial condition. Let's call this R4B. That second resonance, given where I've drawn M, is going to put us on a new circle that looks like this. We'll begin resonating in this direction, and we'll go all the way around until this point here, where the voltage at the switch node tries to go below zero. At this point, body diode of Q2 will turn on, cause another clamping action, and that body diode will remain on as inductor current flows through it until the inductor current ramps down to zero again. Now, kind of for positive current, so Q2, the body diode can be on. Over here, we were at negative current, so Q1's body diode could be on. Both of them commutate when the current hits zero. When that finally ramps down to zero, the body diode will shut off and we'll end up on a third resonant trajectory, which is finally one where we can ring out in between these two bounds without any body diode clamping. And this will be our final ringing of the circuit. Okay. So if we never turn Q1 on after interval 3. I'll call it after interval 4, excuse me. This is kind of the trajectory it would go to. This is not a good thing to do, not something you would want to let happen in the converter, particularly as you have the synchronous buck implementation. I just wanted to show another example of these body diodes clamping, and it can happen multiple times. What happens when we go from this first trajectory and turn on Q1 body diode, we dump a little bit of energy out of the circuit. We see the radius decrease from R4 to R4B. This one, R4C for our final radius. Then from R4B, we have reduce the energy enough such that Q1's body diode never turns on, but as we ring around, it's not enough to keep Q2's body diode from turning on. So then when we get down to 0 volts, we need to dump a little bit more energy out of the circuit. It's only when we've done both of those that we get to this new radius R4C, which is small enough such that we can just ring out and have the voltage constrained within the bounds of these two clamping diodes. Okay. Depending on M, we may have 0, 1, or 2 different times that we turn body diodes on as we let this ring out. But again, kind of our best case, what we'd really like to design is something where Q1 turns on right at this time, and we're done with this resonant interval, move on to the next period. So let's look at that. What I'm going to do is, so we've already kind of seen we can look at multiple intervals on a single state plane, even when some switching actions occur. So it's all kind of so far when our controlled switching actions stay the same. But now what we're going to do is we're going to plot out a complete period of the operation of the synchronous buck converter on the state plane. So we're going to have all 4 intervals here. We've looked in detail at interval 4. The first thing we'll draw on it is interval 2. Look at that a little bit more closely. And then we're going to add these non-resonant intervals 1 and 3 onto the state plane. They're going to be not so interesting on the state plane because the voltage stays constant. The current just ramps from one value to another. But we're going to put all of it so we can see a full period trajectory on the state plane. So on that slide, we're going to start by looking at interval 2. In interval 2, we have initial condition of I1. We kind of go through this resonance that brings the voltage down to 0, causing us to end up at a current of I2. So this segment here we'll draw first because we haven't looked at it yet. I alluded to it on the DCM buck, said this existed on the DCM buck, but happens pretty quickly. So let's hop back there. So for interval 2, our initial condition was I sub L is equal to I2, some big positive value, and V sub switch was equal to VG, right? So as we normalize that, that's going to give us J sub L is just some normalized current J2, and M sub C is equal to VG divided by V base. Our V base is VG, so that's 1. Our initial condition is somewhere up here. Try to find up on our M sub C, J sub L axes. Right here is 1. Our initial condition here at some value, J2. Do I have those numbers right? Seems like I would have called that J1. Yeah, excuse me. Should be I1 and J1. So let me go back here. It should all be 1. And again, our DC solution is not going to change. It's the same resonant circuit that we're looking at, whether we're in interval 2 or interval 4. With both FETs off, it looks like C switch, inductor, and voltage source. So DC solution is still going to be here. And we're going to have a radius R2 in this sub-interval 2. And we're going to resonate in this direction. Again, I could verify the direction of this resonance by looking at the initial condition on the derivatives of any of the elements, but given that I've already plotted the waveforms and know that during this interval, voltage decreases from VG down to 0, I know I must be going this direction. I can't be going the direction that would just turn on the high side body diode as I've drawn it. And we'll end this interval over here at current I2, which will normalize to J2 just as we've labeled it. Nothing important or significant about that other than that's just what we named the current at the end of this interval. Okay. Keep a constant radius R2. And I'm going to begin now as we move towards solving the entire circuit operation, labeling the angles of all of our resonant circuits. And to keep things straight in my mind, what I like to do is, and this will be a little bit more significant in a moment, but I'll use Greek letters for the angles that correspond to whatever interval we're in. So second letter of the Greek alphabet is beta, and this is interval 2 that we're looking at. So I'm going to call this angle beta, just what is the angle swept out during this resonant arc that occurs in this interval. So that's subinterval 2. Subinterval 4 we've already drawn on the previous slide. Subinterval 4 we had initial condition of minus J3. Through my things here. And we swept out a trajectory that took us up to this M is equal to 1 point. We had a current of minus J4 when we did so. And moved in this direction during subinterval 4. Add my R4, and an angle here, delta, the fourth letter of the Greek alphabet for the angle swept out in subinterval 4. Okay. So that's all from the previous analysis. Now we've got both of our two resonant intervals, and I'm just going to add to this what happens during our linear intervals, intervals 1 and 3. So during interval 1, the voltage stays locked at VG and the current ramps up from, if we're in steady state, minus I4 up to I1. During interval 3, voltage stays clamped at 0. We ramp down from I2 to minus I3. So if I sketch that on my state plane, a little bit uninteresting, but during interval 1, the current ramps up from minus I4 to I1 at a constant voltage. This is interval 1, just a vertical line between these two points. And then interval 3, the current ramps down from J2 to minus J3. Again, just a vertical line. Putting all four subintervals together on the state plane, we end up with is a closed trajectory. We should, if we're in steady state, everything should end up wherever it started. As the capacitor voltage and inductor current change, they need to come back to wherever they started for steady state to be true and valid. So that means on the state plane, we should end up with some closed trajectory. And in general, it's comprised of some circular arc segments and some linear segments. Can be all circular. We plotted something where we ignored all the capacitances, it would be all linear. Probably less interesting and less worthwhile. But we'll end up with some kind of trajectory like this. So this is the complete state plane with all of the switching intervals in it. And we can now use it to kind of analyze everything together. We did have a ZVS condition that we looked at for subinterval 4. We said we needed J3 to be great enough, store enough energy in the inductor before the start of this interval such that we could achieve zero voltage switching. We could also write a zero voltage switching condition for subinterval 2. The reason we typically don't look at it is if we're assuming this is a forward power flow converter, we're delivering power to V. It means that if we achieve zero voltage switching on this transition, we had some minus I3 that was great enough to give us zero voltage switching. Well, I1 needs to be larger in magnitude than I3. enough to keep the average positive and deliver the output power. So I1 is going to inherently be a larger magnitude, have more energy available. So at that point, we should always have enough energy to achieve zero voltage switching on this transition, as long as we already achieved it here and we have positive power flow, meaning the average value of IL is greater than zero. That's true, then we should kind of natively satisfy this condition without any issues. If it's not, if we reverse power flow, then we would have a condition on I1, or if we were sacrificing ZBS down here, but it would be derived in almost this exact same way, except we'd be looking at the distance going right to left instead of this transition. So with that, we've got the complete state plane. And what we're going to do from here, beginning next class, is take the equations for all four intervals together and get a net solution for the converter. What are all the timings? What is the output power of this thing? Fine is that, okay, we can kind of know how to analyze these linear subintervals. It's just a constant slope on the inductor current for 1 and 3. For 2 and 4, we'll end up getting two equations off the state plane, one for what are these angles, beta and delta, and then some Pythagorean theorem-like equation relating the radius at the beginning and end of the interval. We'll get two equations out of them. Jointly, that's enough to solve complete converter operation, solve for what the output power is, and let us decide what all the switch timings should be to achieve a given conversion ratio and output power. We'll do that all with state plane analysis. We'll pick up there and be able to solve this converter next class. Okay. Thanks, everyone.